Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Louis Profeta, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, got any news for me today?
Oh, but you just showed me an article. I don't know. Well, I do know what to make of it. I don't know.
Like some of these articles that I find on the internet.
Well, this one, some might say a little weird. That this is a device.
Yeah, this one has me questioning whether or not it would be helpful or not.
So it's a 3D, it makes like a virtual person.
It's a program that utilizes 3D technology to create an avatar that you can use to take pictures with or converse with, and it has some amount of given intelligence, and then it will... according to this article, anyway, it will learn things and learn how to respond to you.
Right. Well, it was a title that caught my attention. It says, new smartphone app lets you take selfies with dead loved ones to bring them back to life, in quotes. And the theory being that if you set this up with a loved one...
While they're still alive.
Still alive, and then the loved one subsequently passes, that you can... in effect, have these conversations, you know, with your loved one. And I'm sure that people have all sorts of different thoughts on that. And my personal thought is, nah. You know, I mean, but then others, look, we know a lot of people find great comfort in sitting down and looking at photos and old photos, you know, of their loved ones. And they talk to them, they don't get answered back all the time, but they talk
to them.
Sometimes they do.
They pause and they take the time to listen.
Right. But then others would say, boy, that's really deluding yourself, you know. It's like a cool joke in some way, you know. So I don't know.
It could be. Well, you know what? When I read through it the first time, there was a big piece of me that said, you know, if the technology is fun technology for what's going on the internet these days, but then when you turn it around and you try to market it to bereaved people with the caption of "we're bringing people back to life," it's in some place inside of me, they're crossing a line. On the other hand, knowing what we know about today's technology and how spirit tends to love the technology that we have and takes advantage of communicating, would this then provide another portal for them to actually take control of an avatar and legitimately respond back to it?
So it's like the same way that they do EVP
right.
or ITC?
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe.
Use the technology
to communicate back to you. But then... what if somebody becomes so dependent on this that they actually cross their own psychological barrier, you know? And then at that point, it's doing more damage than good.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, I don't like it as a bereavement tool, but who am I to say?
Well, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of years ago when they first disclosed that they were capable of cloning animals. And I think they had, I forgot the name of the cow or whatever, or a sheep or whatever the first animal was that they were able to clone. And the controversy that came up from that was immense. What people started to do in these cloning places, and before the cloning places started to open up, was if they lost a pet, particularly, because now they were talking about an animal, if they lost a pet, they would have the DNA saved so that when the cloning became available to the public, they could take the deceased pet and make a new one out of it. The reality is, at least the way I see it is, you may be able to physically replicate via DNA, but you can't get the soul, the spirit, the consciousness that belonged to that physical person or pet
right.
back again.
Just get empty shells.
Well, even if this avatar works and it can speak back to you,
yeah.
and it can learn what you want to hear, and it can learn who it is, it's still a robot. It's still a program.
You know, it makes me think, as we progress in our science, you know, in medicine, there will come a time, probably not in our physical lifetimes, but maybe in future generations, where all of these diseases like cancer and heart disease and so forth will be conquered, you know, and then people won't get cancer anymore. People won't have heart disease, et cetera. They won't have stroke.
Very positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, eventually it's inevitable. It'll come. And theoretically, you could live forever. I mean, they could replace your parts, you know, and you could just keep living and living and living. What would happen then? I mean, you still have consciousness and you still have the soul, even if you were 500 years old, but there'd be a lot less souls in the afterlife, right?
Assuming there's a fixed number of souls.
Right.
That's the question that needs to be answered.
You said something to me earlier also, which I thought was interesting but somewhat amusing. You had lunch with a friend of yours,
uh-huh.
and her husband died a few years ago, and she's back in the dating game, and she was going out with a particular gentleman, and she asked out loud her deceased husband if this man that she was seeing was the right one to
right.
give her some
right.
sort of sign. And as soon as she said that, a mirror fell off of the wall and fell on the floor. So my first question was, so how do you interpret that? Is that a yes or a no? You know, it's similar to what mediums do. You know, the two mediums can get exactly the same information, but they might interpret it differently.
Right, and I go back to the same explanation is, along with the act of the spirit having the mirror fall off the wall, or lights blink, or the TV go on, or whatever it is, along with that, that comes the telepathy that's attached to it. And I think that you instinctively know whether it, in response to your question in this case, which was waiting for a positive or a negative answer, that telepathic response, be it positive or negative, came along with the mirror falling down.
Yeah, so if when physical action is accompanied by this inner knowing, then it's a legitimate sign,
right.
so to speak.
And I know you like to call it an inner knowing, which is a pretty good way to describe it, but when mediums get pieces of information, or even when we get pieces of information through a dream or while we're meditating, it's not cut and dry. It's not one thing. It's a concept surrounding that thing that comes through. So there's more than just the one answer. There's more information that goes with it.
Well, it's time to go to a break. We have a great guest coming up, Dr. Louis Profeta, who's an emergency room physician, has a lot of different stories to tell us. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Louis Profeta. Our sponsor is the WindBridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Louis Profeta grew up in Indianapolis. He received his medical degree from the Indiana University School of Medicine, did his residency in emergency medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Profeta is a frequent guest on local television and radio. He currently practices emergency medicine at St. Vincent Hospital in Indianapolis. He's the recipient of numerous honors and awards for his contributions to community health and community activism. His book, which we're going to be talking about tonight, is called The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. The website is doctor's name. It's Louis Profeta, LouisProfeta.com. Welcome to the show, and I really appreciate you being on. I know for our listeners, Dr. Profeta is coming off several weeks of the serious case of pneumonia, and his voice somewhat hampered, but thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Bob.
Yeah. So, you know, you describe in your own words being an adrenaline junkie. You know, you thrive on chaos and controversy and constant motion. So at face value, that seems to be perfectly suited for your profession, emergency medicine. What could be more chaotic?
No, I think it's actually suited for every emergency physician to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, is there something that flipped the switch for you that caused you to contemplate, you know, a bigger picture?
You mean in terms of medicine or just in life overall?
Well, I mean, in life overall, I mean, you write about getting to know, you know, your patient and listening, and something that I know a lot of your colleagues don't always necessarily do.
Well, I think it's there for every physician. Maybe they don't express it enough, but in order to really stay in a medicine, you have to sort of have that, I think, being a little bit in tune to your spiritual side, so to speak, and sort of especially appreciate the value of life and sort of the beauty in life and sort of mysticism and beauty around you. So I think it goes hand in hand with being a physician.
Yeah, and the ER, I think I mentioned to you off air, I mean, you did a wonderful TEDx talk, and you get the impression that the ER is like a stage. It's a microcosm of life, but it's sort of a lot of doctors would seem to miss what's going on because they're so focused on treating the patient in a swift fashion. Every once in a while, you have the luxury of really seeing a patient and getting to know the patient. It must be very difficult in that kind of setting.
You know, you're exactly right. And that is one of the interesting things about emergency medicine is because of the pace, we often don't have an opportunity, like other specialties, really get to know the people. I mean, they're going to be brief in our lives, you know, less than 10 minutes. And oftentimes the documentation only may be a couple minutes. But occasionally something happens where you sort of connect and you click. And years down the line, not only can you remember the patient and the interaction, you can remember where they were sitting in the room, which room they were in, what the family members looked like. It's incredible how things like that can come into your mind and then just sort of lock themselves in for, you know, decades sometimes.
Yeah, you have many wonderful accounts in the book. The patient in room 9 says he's God, and one of them in particular really struck me. You had a patient with a seemingly routine diagnosis, and you discharged that patient. But before the patient left the hospital, you heard a voice in your head that said, "Stop him." Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, years ago, actually, it was early in my practice, I saw a gentleman that came in short of breath, and I didn't really think much of it. He was young, pretty healthy, and really our workup didn't show much, but we were really busy, and I think I was in a hurry to get him discharged out of the emergency department. And I remember vividly standing in the hallway and him sort of thanking me, and as he walked out, just before he hit the double door, sort of something in my head said, "Stop him," you know, and I almost swore I heard a voice, and I immediately asked him to stop. And I explained to him, I said, "You know what? Something's bothering me. I don't think I spent enough time with you. Would you just do me a favor, go back to the room and let me start all over?" And he did. He agreed to it. He was a little, I think, put off because he'd been there so long. And I went in, sat with him, and a little bit later, I diagnosed him with a very large blood clot in his lung. And, you know, this gentleman very well could have died had he walked out those doors. It was just very fortuitous.
So, I mean, when you reflect upon that, I mean, is it something that's happened since, or you know, or was it a one-time thing, or do you often listen to your inner voice?
No, I think it happens to every emergency physician, and whether it's our inner voice or whether it's something sort of deeper inside of you that says, "Hey, you know, this is different," and oftentimes you can't put your finger on it, but there's something about the situation, and when you're trying to describe it to somebody, you oftentimes can't. You just say, "Well, I don't know, I can't explain it, but something just wasn't right. It didn't feel right." Mm-hmm. And whether you call that sixth sense, whether you call that a higher being. You know, I think it's a combination of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because, you know, that somebody might look at that at face value and say, well, look, you're a highly trained, you know, physician and it was all part of the diagnosis. But it's a poor argument because you're already discharged the guy. You made your diagnosis, but then something told you that there's something wrong. And how fortunate it was for him that you listened.
Well, yes, I guess it was. But, you know, oftentimes, not often, but on occasion, we it works the opposite way against us, too. They do leave, and we make mistakes, and we're human, and it's devastating when we do. It's devastating for all ER docs and for all physicians. And sometimes we do have to just listen to that sort of that inner voice a little bit more.
Mm. The title of the book, you know, The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God, you took the title from an account of an elderly patient. And from what I recall, I mean, you saw the patient for the first time. I mean, you truly saw her as a soul and not a sick patient. So, you know, was that would you call that like a defining experience for you?
Well, yeah, I would, but actually the title came from a different case. What was interesting, I can't recall the individual, but a nurse sort of tossed a chart at me and said, the patient room 9 says he's God. And it was just sort of this dismissive thing, and just the way she said it, because it's such a commonplace in the emergency department to have people sort of claim items like that. And, and I remember that sort of phrase stuck with me, but years later, I was in a patient's room, an elderly woman's room, and was flying through the exam. She was from a nursing home, sort of older and disheveled and sort of unkempt, and there was nobody with her. And I was quickly in a hurry, and as I started to walk out the door, I turned around, and I could almost vividly see her as a child. And it's one of those things that I bring back up in sort of a current theme in my talks, in my lecture, in my writing, is that for the first time, I didn't see her as a elderly patient. I could look at her and actually see her as a child and realize that's somebody's little girl, that's somebody's little boy. And once I had that sort of paradigm shift in the way I thought about patients, I think maybe become a much better doctor, especially with the elderly.
Yeah. I do you think that we can do better the way we treat the elderly, especially end of life stage?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I talked about before is that, unfortunately, the elderly don't tug at our heartstrings as much as little children do, especially for like commercials and fundraisers and stuff like that. And these are, especially at the end of their life, these are little children. And we can do better if we have to treat them the same way as we do our children. And the trouble is they just don't have any, their parents aren't there with them. So, you know, they lose out on all of that. And certainly we can be more comforting, especially in the end of their life. These are the people that build our country, that brought us to where we are today, and we have to give back to them.
Yeah, and it's always a fine line for you as a physician. I mean, we always have the notion as a people and a profession that, you know, you have to fight death always. You just have to keep fighting death, as if it's a battle that must be won. And there comes a time where it's not time to fight anymore. So that must be the most difficult thing as a physician, and recognizing when it's okay to reassure a patient that they can let go.
Well, I think it's actually the easiest part of being a physician and being able to recognize it. There's been papers written, such as How Doctors Die, that show that we use a fraction of the healthcare cost in the end of our lives as the general population. I mean, we get it. We understand what's futile and what's not. The trouble is there's been this sort of change in society where we have equated these significant medical technologies and prolongations of life as being synonymous with love, and it just isn't. And sometimes it's more of a show of love to sit with your elderly patient or elderly family member and, you know, maybe talk to them, sing to them, read poetry, you know, flip through old albums or comb their hair, you know, do their nails or something like that, as opposed to rushing them to the emergency department, putting them on antibiotics and sticking IVs into them. And we just got to get back to that sort of purity of thought.
Yeah. You often you lecture about, the spirituality of medicine. You know, some people may think those terms are mutually exclusive, spirituality and medicine, but you don't, do you?
I don't think any doctor does. Yeah. It's sort of like that old adage, there's no atheist in a foxhole. You know,
right.
you'll have general surgeons. So occasionally, I had a general surgeon friend of mine who said, "Oh, he doesn't believe in God, or he doesn't, believe this or that." And I said, "Well, that's not true." He goes, "Well, yeah, it is." I said, "No, I can prove it." I said, "You ever been in the operating room where all of a sudden you lose control of an artery and a patient starts bleeding out and dying, and inner voice says, 'Oh, God, help me clamp that artery off'?" And he just sort of looked at me and smiled. He goes, "Well, that doesn't mean I believe in God." I said, "Well, it means you can turn to him at the worst possible moment in your life."
Right. I said, you also describe God as the AAA of humanity.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think so. You know, it's one of the unfortunate things is I think, you know, oftentimes we only turn during our darkest hours. I think we're all guilty of it, me included. You know, when things are going great, we don't think about him. When things are going horrible, that's the only thing we think about.
Right. Another account, and I believe I'll get this one right. You were talking about a relative, you know, Aunt Maria. And it's an involved story, but it began with something that we have seen people have reported to us over the years, that somehow there's this knowing that a loved one has died, even though you don't have any, you know, physical notification of it. And as I recall, that's what happened to you. At the very moment that your aunt died, you knew when you made a call and found out it was true. I mean, do you think that maybe such things are part of a bigger plan that helps us as we navigate our physical lives? Somebody preparing us?
No, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, with all honesty, you know, she was in hospice, but she'd been in there for a long time. And literally, I dropped a pencil or I was writing on a chart, looked up, looked at the nurse and said, "My aunt just died." And called over, and the nurse said, "Yeah, how did you know?" I said, "I just know." Now, whether that's meant to comfort us or not, I mean, think about the thousands of times we think about maybe potentially things happening to our loved ones that they didn't happen to, God willing, or God bless that that doesn't happen. But, you know, who knows? I think that sometimes I think that we tend to think and dwell more on that stuff than how to live our lives. So maybe it's sort of a, you know, conglomeration of both.
Yeah. As I was reading about, your career, I don't have any statistics, but I would imagine that ER physicians burn out pretty quickly.
They actually have the highest burnout rate of any any specialty medicine, the highest.
Well, that's not surprising. So, how have you been able to keep yourself motivated and thriving and interested?
The thing is, interestingly, is our group has about 50 doctors in it, and we have an exceedingly low burnout rate. In fact, it approaches almost zero, and we were incredibly busy. But a lot of it has to do with the people you work with, but also feeling appreciated. One of the things that I think we emphasize sort of a lot, and it sounds sort of crass, is that we say, "Hey, listen, it's just a job, and that you can't take all this home with you." I mean, my goodness, if I took all this death and dying and horrible stuff I see home with me, I would be a complete wreck. I wouldn't be able to function as a husband or as a father. So you have to learn sort of how to leave it there and to sort of enjoy your time off.
Mm. I guess that's something that you really have to teach young physicians. I don't know if they tell you about that stuff in medical school.
No, but I think that it's one of those things that you're exactly right. You do have to teach it to them. You know, we have a tendency to, I don't want to say we hold ourselves up as these pillars of, responsibility or whatever you call it, compassion and stuff like that. But there's tons of people in this world that have very, very hard jobs that work countless hours, that take care of a struggling household or children or any number of things whose jobs and lives are just as important as ours. And we have to sort of put our lives in that context too and realize that, hey, we're all in it together.
Mm. I mean, do you sometimes wish that you practice medicine in a different environment, and like an environment that allowed you to spend and get to more time with the patient and get to know them. I mean, I would think, you know, I mean, you're a very compassionate guy. I would think that that must bug you sometimes.
Actually, I think it's the opposite.
Really?
And I, you know, and what I mean by that is that, like I was saying, I'm cut out to do fast stuff, to move from patient to patient, to, you know, to sort of maybe I'm not sure I would be, it sounds horrible, but most of our docs, I mean, yeah, we like to learn about patients, but I want to get to the next person. I want to try to save the next person. So I want to make the next diagnosis. And that's what I feel like I've been put on this earth to do.
Right.
And, you know, we work quick. We work fast, and it's important. We need people in the world like us too, as opposed to just, you know, others that maybe can spend more time in that kind of environment. So no, I actually I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy the pace. And you know, occasionally it happens that I do connect and able to learn about people and spend time with people, and that's great. But it's also a great job when I can't too.
Yeah, I was struck by. In watching that TEDx talk that you did, you know, when we talk about, you know, going home and leaving it there. Also, it must be difficult to disassociate from your feelings when you're working on somebody. For instance, you were relating how you were working on somebody that was, I don't know, cut up in a fight or whatever, and you were stitching him up, and he had a cut right in the middle of a swastika tattoo. How do you hold it together there? Don't you? Obviously, I know you're a professional, but is it difficult sometimes to suppress your feelings and not something?
Absolutely. Now, I'll tell you, people always say, well, what's the hardest thing or the worst things that you've ever seen in the emergency department? And well, the hardest thing about being an ER doc is telling somebody their loved one's been killed. I mean, there's number one is that nothing is worse than that. Okay, I mean, you'll see people, you'll have children, you know, horrible things that happen. You do everything you possibly can, and things still go the wrong way. But, you know, you find a little comfort in the fact that you've done everything you can, but nothing compares to that walk into the quiet room kind of thing. You know, one of the things is that the world was full of people with different perspectives on the world, whether, you know, somebody covered in swastikas. I mean, I don't know what his upbringing was. I don't know what his life was like. You know, it's easy to sort of cast dispersions in those situations, but part of you have to stop. And even in those situations, I look back and I picture that person that's now covered with swastikas or races, you know, tattoos or what have you. And I say, you know what, that was a child once. That was a child maybe riding a big wheel or playing ball in the front yard. Something's happened to get that poor person from point A to point B. And we have to remember that.
Right. That's well said. Do you think that, you know, we live in a world that's, you know, rapidly advancing technology-wise, and we have this instant gratification generation. Do you think that that's eventually going to discount, like, personal experience and meaning and purposefulness? I'm worried about the future generations. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we see that now.
Yeah.
I mean, once technology, like I said, once technology took over sort of the role of being the caregiver for your parents, you saw that dissociation happen. And, you know, it became easy just to sort of push those patients into either long-term care facilities or advanced technologies as opposed to going home and sitting with them. See, the trouble is that in order to take care of an elderly patient or a parent, there have to be some sacrifices. You know, whether it's financial, whether it's after, you know, it's other activities, travel, sports, et cetera, you have to be willing to give that up. And this generation just doesn't do it as well. But I think we're starting to see it, the pendulum tilt the other way a little bit.
Well, that's encouraging. We are talking with Dr. Louis Profeta. The book is called The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. Dr. Profeta's website is louisprofeta.com. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Stay with us.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Wind Bridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Louis Profeta. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. I'd like to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements, and that's at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Our next webinar of the year is Mediums and Mediumship, Historical Highlights, presented by Dr. Carlos Alvarado on March 15th at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's next Wednesday. You can make your reservations for those seats on the website as well. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle with the drawing set for Earth Day, April 22nd, is up on our website, just waiting for your entry. You can win as many as 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Bobby Allison, Heidi Jaffe, Nancy Marlowe, Ginger Quinlan, or Destin Livers. It's only $5 to enter, and that $5 goes a long way in providing services to both the bereaved and the curious. Our annual grief retreat has been open for super early bird registration on the website, but that will end at the end of this month on March 31st. We do recommend booking early, as last year the rooms at the retreat filled and some attendees had to stay off premises. If you are booking early, however, please keep in mind our no refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website, clicking on the donate button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo. Lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Louis Profeta. The book, The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God, you can actually go to, there's an Amazon link on our website where you can purchase the book, and you'll enjoy it very much. One account, Dr. Profeta, that you wrote about, was something that I've contemplated a lot, and I'm sure a lot of people are. I mean, basically, it's a personal account you had of Mr. Brown, who did some odd jobs and work in your home, and he was killed, unfortunately, in a traffic accident just after finishing work at your home. And, you know, these things come up all the time. If he didn't stay and have the extra cup of coffee, or if he left, you know, a minute earlier or a minute later, maybe it could have been avoided. You know, it's a question, free will versus fate. Do you think about these things? What are your thoughts?
No, I all the time. Who doesn't? You sit and think to yourself, especially medicine or any day of your life, you know, what would happen today? One of the things I always say is that nobody gets up, looks in the mirror, brushes their teeth in the morning and says, today's the day I'm going to die. No, it's just never in our thought process. And then when something tragic happens, we'll say, well, wrong place, wrong time, or if I'd only done this, or if I'd only done that. I mean, sure, it happens all the time. It happens to everybody.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, that seemingly insignificant decisions can not only have dire consequences, but have beneficial and happy consequences too. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And that was one of the things they touched on in that story, that Mr. Brown, I'd invited him, as you remember, to have breakfast, and he had to get on the road, and unfortunately was killed and was hit from behind by a truck and killed right after leaving my house. And, you know, if he stays just a little longer, then he lives, but who knows what would happen to the car in front of him, who was on in that car. Was it a vacation, a bunch of children? And he's the type of guy that I'm sure would have put himself in front of those kids.
Yeah, it's and you can't live your life worrying about every decision you make. You'd be a prisoner, you know. So.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Another account, Christmas Story. You did all you could to medically save a woman, and it just reaches a point, I guess, where there's nothing else in a medical sense to be done, and you just described leaving the rest to a higher power. And the woman recovered. I mean, when you witness recoveries like that, that they appear to be the result of spiritual interventions, because there's nothing that you can explain as a scientist, as a medical doctor, that would cause it. So, I mean,
I think that happens to every doctor who's practiced long enough, where you have something where you go, oh my goodness, how in the world did that happen? How did that patient survive? You just sort of scratch your head and you chalk it up to a higher power, or, you know, whatever it is, you can't explain it. But when it does, it stays with you all your life.
Yeah, and too bad you can't bottle it all the time.
Well, but I also think that we don't notice the miracles that are small, okay, on a daily basis. That we let them pass across our face like a mist, but they happen to us every day. And maybe if we paid closer attention, we could see some miraculous stuff like that. I'll tell you real quick, if I can even get through this. But years ago, I was sitting on a pier in Key West, and one of my friends asked me to take a picture of the sunset. And for whatever reason, I turned the camera to the right and took a picture of a young couple. And I don't know why I did it to this day. And I happened to show them the picture. I emailed it to them. And the wife sent me an email back that it was one of the most precious things they will ever have, because her husband was dying of a brain tumor. And I had no idea when I took the photo. And I still to this day don't know why I turned the camera and pointed at that couple.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you had no idea on a conscious level, but something, maybe the universe put thought in your head. You know?
Sure. But I think that happens to everything. Everybody, we just have to keep our eyes open a little more. There's some pretty amazing stuff out there if we just had our eyes open.
Yeah, and there are still, many of your colleagues that discount things like this happening. I mean, they'll just say, it's a spontaneous remission, and they won't give any credence to the possibility that there are other forces at work. And so,
well, don't you believe that? And what I mean by that is, just because they say it doesn't mean they believe it. Okay, let me tell you, those docs go home at night too and scratch their head and go, oh my goodness. And I think they just don't want to admit it. I think especially with scientists, they have a hard time coming to grips between the two things and separating, and such a fight in their brains that I think more of them believe it than don't, and just don't want to admit to it.
Yeah, we find that with a lot of medical doctors that talk about their patients having these, deathbed visions or near-death experiences, and many of them will publicly discount them. But like you said, if you talk to them privately, they're scratching their head.
One of the things I always found interesting is how many people seem to be having one-sided conversations, especially at the end of their life. It's almost like you're hearing one half of a telephone call. It's really sort of quite amazing.
Yeah, and we've talked to so many hospice doctors and people that specialize in end of life care, and to many of them these things are commonplace. As a matter of fact, a lot of the doctors use it as a barometer of of knowing when a patient is going to pass.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah. You wrote an article. I know you write a lot of articles and you blog often and so forth. The one I came across, you wrote an article about the value of hugging, and I like that.
Thank you.
Especially, working with the bereaved. I mean, a lot of times, I found that, that a hug can convey feelings and just an understanding that words can't accomplish, and you get that. I don't imagine that there's a lot of hugging that goes on between physician and patient, though.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
they do. They come up and they're so gracious. Their family members will hug you on their way out. I mean, some will yell at you and scream at you and spit at you, but a lot of them too will extend their hands or give you a hug. It's the greatest feeling in the world.
Right. And that hug, I'm just guessing, makes up for a lot of the stitching up of swastikas and things like that, right?
One hug, you can have a horrible day. You could just have 20 miserable patients, and it's the one that gives you the hug and thanks you on their way out the door that just makes your day. Yeah. That's the stuff you remember.
So after all these years, if I asked you, what have you learned about life from working in the ER? I mean, that's a question you could probably go on for 2 hours, but...
You know, it's pretty easy. We all have value. I mean, that's what I've learned. We all have value.
And
and simple as it comes. You know, we all want to be loved. We all have value. We all have a reason on this earth.
You find yourself, your professional work has affected your personal life as well. I mean, I guess you see people differently than you did before.
Absolutely.
You got... Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm a different person by far as an adult. Once you do that kind of thing, when you take care of people like that, and they put you in their trust or in their charge, you save a life, you deliver your first baby, or you give somebody the worst news of their lives, it changes you. It sits with you. Sometimes it makes you a better father, better, you know, mother. Sometimes it doesn't, but it does have impact on you.
Right. So what's in the future for you? More books?
Well, you know, I've been writing for LinkedIn, and that's where my big articles have sort of come out worldwide. I mean, last, I think, two or three articles I've written have been probably read 5-10 million times. And so that's sort of where my writing mostly is showing up now. You know, I thought about putting another book out there, but you know what? I like writing individual articles. You know, I don't care if I make money. I mean, I'm not writing for the money. I'm just writing to, you know, maybe give people comfort, show them the world in a little different light, things like that. My number one passion is being an emergency physician. So I think I'll just sort of stick to that, trying to be a good doctor, a good father, and see where things take me.
Can't argue with that. That's a perfect way to live your life. And people can have gained access to the... is there a link on your website to the blogs that you write to LinkedIn? Or
you know, there isn't. And, you know, if you just type in my name, this stuff comes up all over the Internet. I mean, I think the article that I'm most proud of, and I don't know if you stumbled upon, is I know you love me, now let me die.
Right.
And I think that's one that you'll find very germane, that deals with sort of those end-of-life care issues. And the other article that I just recently wrote is called When the Lion Kills Your Child, about the heroin epidemic in America. And again, they sort of both touch on the preciousness of life and how we need to do everything possible to sort of make it worthwhile.
Okay, and as Dr. Profeta said, you can... if you just, because I did it myself, if you just type in his name, you'll get links to all that. And the website is lewisprofeta.com. The book, which is highly recommended, is called The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. Thanks so much for being with us. I know it wasn't the ideal time for you, and I wish you much healing and continued light in your journey. I hope that you'll come back with us again.
Thank you, Bob. It was very kind of you to have me.
Okay, take care now. Good night.
Bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Sandy Raybould, Eddie, Maverick, Orion Keene, Grayson Pierce Keene, Linda Ellis, Linda Bonventry, Evelyn Ingram, Cynthia Post, Helen Montalto, Michael Kim, David Haith, Glenna Irwin, Marianne Pierschka, Stanley Mullen, Don DeMello, James Rafferty, Diana Archangel, Isabel Ginsburg, Vince Mattia, Lauren Ramnath, Rich LeBlay, Veronica James, and Alex Hanna. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thoughts by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say...
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.